And I always preached that when I was at the PRCA, when we talked about rules and how we were going to handle situations.
Yeah.
And if you always go back to that, is this what's best for the animals, then you don't have to explain yourself and you don't have to think of what your answer was.
Yeah.
You did what was best for the animals.
Hi, I'm Heidi Harriet. Welcome to Animal Tales, where we talk about my favorite subject, animals. Years ago, I was working with animals, performing and exhibiting animals at zoos and fairs, special events, amusement parks, even rodeos. And I loved what I did. I felt privileged to be working with the animals. But I pivoted from that a few decades ago to work for a trade association to help tell the story. We were under attack. Mistruths and actual lies were being told about what we did and how we cared for our animals. I knew there was a different story to tell. I watched people like my father and the mentors that I grew up with be vilified, and I just felt the need to jump in and help learn to tell the story. One of the people who was a mentor early on was Cindy Schoenholtz. She was working with the Animal Welfare Council and the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association. They were actually doing a great job of putting information out, creating pamphlets and such to help the public understand the animals and how rodeo worked. And I felt like we needed to do the same thing to provide that comfort level. So I've always enjoyed chatting with her. She was such a great help in the early days of my learning the ropes in government relations and, again, learning how to tell the story. So I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Cindy Schoenholtz. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to be here.
It's great to have you here. I met you, boy, a while back. You were in the fray, had the Animal Welfare Council, and I had started work with the Trade Association and went from performing with animals to trying to figure out how we got ahead of the noise and the issues. And you were just such an important player in those, in that time frame. This would be the early 2000s, I guess. And tell us about your background, first of all, and then let's talk about the Animal Welfare Council a little bit.
Yeah, so I really got started in all of the animal welfare stuff when I worked for the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association. I did that for 20 years, and the Animal Welfare Council was kind of formed out of the PRCA. Before I got there, and it's been around for quite a while. Obviously, the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association has a big stake in the game here in educating the public and legislators and that type of thing to continue the sport of rodeo. So, and I have competed in rodeos. I've done any number of things with animals and that type of thing. And now I am currently independent consultant, and I manage two rodeos, one in Estes Park, Colorado, and one in Redding, California.
Oh, two beautiful places. I'm jealous.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
Very, very neat places. It's interesting to go back and forth, but obviously both of all of the rodeo industry, it's important to deal with all of the rest of the animal industry and understand how important it is for us to educate each other and the public so we can sustain our industries and basically sustain animals and our interaction with animals.
Yeah, my memory's coming back. My thoughts are coming back that after I met you and saw some of the literature from the PRCA and the Animal Welfare Council, and I had come from the exhibited side. So we had exotic animals and performing animals and such. People like to say circus animals, but the reality is any animals that are trained do exhibitions of all kinds. So I try not to pigeonhole them into that. So exhibited animals, but you folks had done such a great job and gotten out in front and created some literature. And I was trying to, you know, model that because I thought early on a consultant told us, a media consultant, all the people that come to your events and shows and you don't leave them with more information that, you know, just that comfort level or educate them more about what you guys are doing. And you have such an opportunity. And I thought you guys were doing a great job. So what is your background? Did you grow up in ag areas or rodeo, or what's your background?
No, that's another interesting story. My sister won a pony in a coloring contest, so, which are all illegal now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we were living in Southern California when I was a kid, and my sister was horse crazy. So she won this pony, and then we had horses from then on. So
okay.
I showed horses and... then did some rodeoing and that type of thing. And before I realized that the management aspect, the government relations, all of that was kind of my bailiwick, and was fortunate enough to get into that part of it. And, for 20 years, I handled all the government relations, all of the, critical communications when things happened. And rodeo was under big attack when I started in 97.
We were
under the gun. And what I think the most important lesson for me to learn was is you just don't be on the offensive. It's not a fight if it's only one-sided. So you just you do your thing and you do what's right and you communicate with people honestly, and the rest of it kind of takes care of itself. It's very counterintuitive to most people,
right?
And actually, PR folks, I've always told everybody that dealing with these animal rights and animal welfare issues, most PR firms don't quite get it. They try and give an answer to everything, and sometimes you just don't answer. You just move forward and do your own thing.
Right. But what you did,
legitimizing those people, if you debate them or answer every single thing they do, you're legitimizing them.
Yeah, and also it. And they're very good at that, because the animal, we're referencing the animal rights community, the animal rights zealots, and these are not these are mainstream groups. PETA, the Humane Society of the United States, ASPCA now is a even bigger player in that field. And
right.
So many more of those that like to think of themselves as animal welfare, but they're actually, they don't celebrate the human animal bond, the
right.
starting point. And I think you're one of the people I learned that from early on. A couple other players in this were the National Animal Interest Alliance, who I believe you're on the board, or at least an advisor.
I've been on the board just talked to Patty the other day. So
yeah. And they great organization, that represent umbrella organization. And, the difference between animal rights and animal welfare is really the starting point. And I've found that messaging, really works well, to understand that animal welfare celebrates the human animal bond in an atmosphere of well-being for all. Animal rights doesn't believe in that bond and believes animals should be admired from afar, left alone, all of that. And, the utopian wild, which unfortunately doesn't exist.
Right. And when I was working for the PRCA, and when I would talk to the media, that would be the thing. If they ever asked me about animal rights, I would just answer with the definition of animal rights versus animal welfare, and that we believe in animal welfare. And I didn't name the groups, and I always called them critic groups. I never named them, never named a person or even a group when I was talking to the media. And, and you can't lump them all in. Like you were saying, there are people that are well-meaning that are, drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. And it's our job to educate them and the ones that really want to be educated, and let them know what we really do and how important it is to continue on and with our interaction with animals.
Yeah. And I mentioned that to you before we went on the air, that the audience for this podcast are those who understand the human animal bond and helping endorse and confirm that we need to maintain that. But those who have joined these groups, who are the middle and the folks on the lower end, who just really care about animals and have been duped to think that that's the best way to put their energy and time out there. And they don't realize they're actually creating a world in which we don't get to spend our time with animals. And I grew up, I'm a third generation trainer, I believe, as you know, animal trainer. My father, and I use this often, always said, what we need to be mindful about is what's truly in the best interest of the animal. And when I take it back to that, it always helps me remember one, why I'm doing this, and two, that I evaluate a piece of legislation or some media story or something, and I always think first, is this in the best interest of the animal? And most of the time, the emotional, ideologic side is not. When they think it is, sanctuary is a great example, is not necessarily in the best interest of the animals, right?
Right. And I always preached that when I was at the PRCA, when we talked about rules and how we were going to handle situations.
Yeah.
And if you always go back to that, is this what's best for the animals, then you don't have to explain yourself and you don't have to think of what your answer was.
Yeah.
You did what is best for the animals, and you don't create policies for PR purposes or rules or regulations. You do what's best for the animals. And we always leaned on our veterinarians, and dealing with the large animal veterinarians in the Rodeo Association was a turning point for the association, and they required veterinarians on site. And that allowed us to always have that person there that could help us make that decision
with
what's best for animals. And your general public that you're talking about that really care about animals, they'll listen to the veterinarians.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and when the veterinarians come and they see and they help us care for the animals, then it creates, you know, an atmosphere of let's do what's best for the animals. And they will answer truthfully in legislative sessions and that type of thing on how well the animals are taken care of. But then you also have to listen to them and put yourself out there. And if they have suggestions, you have to work with them to upgrade what you're doing.
Absolutely. That's a great point. The, you know, the AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, disagrees with so much of the like legislation and animal issues that the media and legislators think are, you know, right for the animals, even adopt, don't shop, those things. But they don't necessarily put it out there, or take a strong stand in the public relations world. But the other thing you just said, it's really important, and I preached this, and again, I probably learned a little bit of this from some of the stuff that you put together and created, was to be proactive, that we are generationally good at what we do. However, we need to combine that with best practices, updates in science and technology and animal husbandry, and with the veterinarians, the experts, the researchers, and then that program stands the test of time, right? But we're trying to throw out the generational expertise. You know, it's like, well, what they did was wrong. Well, no, but let's take that to the next step. And that's the family I came from. That's how we approached it. And you're absolutely right. When the PR and the folks get creative and try to spin their narrative, it gets off track. And I was a spokesperson for a large circus company, and they gave me talking points. I finally learned to smile and say, sure. And then when I went on air, said what I knew to be true and what I knew was defensible and honest. And I wouldn't have to think about what my answer was if asked again, because it would be the same answer. It's a great point. And I think we lost some public trust there too, because when you keep trying to spin it to kind of fit the narrative that's out there, You're losing that battle. So I've always liked where you came from on that. I think that's really important.
Yeah, it took me a while to kind of get it. When I went in there, we were fighting, you know, reacting and that type of thing. And when you talk about the AVMA, we used to have the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association come to the NFR every year. And one year it was a small animal veterinarian. And he, like a lot of people, when they first get into these positions, he thought, well, we just show the animal rights groups how well we take care of the animals and everything will be fine. And he learned, and then he looked at me and he goes, Cindy, they want to put us out of business too. I go, absolutely.
I wish more small animal vets understood that. It's amazing to me.
It was a light bulb moment for him when he realized, whoa, I can't explain away what I'm doing because they don't believe I should be interacting with animals at all. So, those are kind of the important moments that you realize, okay, I've helped somebody that's going to be able to help sustain our industries.
Right. And we used to say, you hit that nail on the head. They don't want better standards for rodeo. They want no rodeo. They don't want bigger cages or better welfare for animal exhibited animals. They want empty cages. They don't want... So there's nothing we could do to please them, right? So right. you can come up with the most ridiculous standards, again, which aren't always in the best interest of the animals. You know, I think of hauling horses now, and you're a horsewoman. It disturbs me that we've now created these box stalls and everybody wants their horse to have more space in the trailer. I think a responsible hauling of a horse is to put them where they actually have something to lean on, whether it's the partitions or the other stall. I would never put my horse in a box stall and never trailer them loose. And I know there are people who do it successfully, but it's an emotional thing. It's not what really is in the best interest of the animal. So that's, you know, one of the things that's bothersome to me. So how are things in the rodeo world now? You're in California and Colorado, two states where I'm guessing you have some challenges. And how is that going? What kind of legislation and such?
The hotbeds right now are LA and San Diego. And LA has been a hotbed for a while. And the PBR, Professional Bull Riders, have kind of stepped up because they have an event there. There's some Charro rodeos and some other things. There are no PRCA rodeos in LA. And so that thing, that's been a long and drawn out thing for a couple of years now. And then they had a rodeo in San Diego at Petco Park. The Padres teamed up with C5 Rodeo from Canada.
Wow.
And it was a very successful event, but you know, the next, you know, there was quite a bit of outcry at the beginning, and then now there's talk of bringing up an ordinance to ban rodeo. They filed a restraining order trying to say you couldn't have animals on the field there, and you know, any number of other things. There was a lot of the activists with the money trying to do what they could. Obviously the people that run the Padres had a little bit deeper pockets, which was nice. Sold out, super innovative in a lot of ways, but it was not sanctioned by the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association. They kind of went out on their own so they could kind of make their own rules and do what they wanted. So those are two places where things are hot and heavy. There is a, they're supposed to be crafting an ordinance in LA, and they had an ordinance and it did not fly. And the biggest issue in LA is the Hispanic and the African-American rodeo folks have stepped up and said, this is our culture. This is our town. We're not. And they came out when they had the last hearing, which we know wasn't on accident during the national finals rodeo. They had it, the Charros and a lot of folks, they showed up downtown on their horses and
pictures of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It was very cool. And it's ongoing and it's not over.
Yeah.
But they've got some political issues trying to keep the Hispanic population from voting them out of office, basically, because they can.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting to see the, you know, how everybody kind of got together and fought that. But those issues are ongoing. Right now, there's no state legislation that I'm aware of, but that's only a matter of time. If they can get a ban in LA or San Diego, then it's going to the state house. And it has in the past, and we fought it in the past. And Colorado, you know, is just a dumpster fire in so many ways. There's nothing particularly against rodeo right now, but they are bringing up possibly trying to license horse facilities.
Oh, that'll be interesting in Colorado.
Yes.
You've got such a dichotomy in Colorado because you have the folks in the more urban areas who, of course, really get on board with this. But there's a lot of rural areas in Colorado where people are one of the things I was jotting down that you said, people are very real because they've lived off their land. They've been involved in agriculture in some way. These are the folks who understand the realities of, you know, what's real and what's this ideologic or emotional or philosophical debate. And those folks don't support these type of things. But you get in the urban areas and they're Colorado's a challenging place.
Well, and it's very similar in Oregon, the big yes. city. You can have your ballot initiatives they pass in the big cities, and then the urban, the rural areas. And Colorado is, I would have thought they would have learned their lesson when they got rid of the spring bear hunt and some other stuff, and then the bears are everywhere. And mm-hmm. but they did not, and they voted to introduce wolves. So,
yeah, I want to talk about that. I'm talking with Cindy Schoenholtz, pro rodeo consultant, and also I think you founded the Animal Welfare Council, did you not?
Or, no, it was founded before I got there, but I've been president for about a million years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's one of the ways I know you. I saw a post on the Animal Welfare Council page about the introduction of wolves. I think that was in Colorado that had already had a history of attacking livestock or something. Talk about that.
Yes. And of course, they promised that they would not bring wolves with that passed into there. But what wolves are you going to find? Like, how are they going to eat if they don't get animals? So they got them from Oregon, and I'm sure Oregon was happy to send them their way. And they did have a history. And it's just a matter of time. And they aren't releasing them out in like the middle of nowhere. I mean, this is Summit County, Grand County. I mean, there's ski resort. It's going to be very interesting. We're like normal, logical people. And to think that they're doing this to me is, and spending, you know, millions and millions of dollars to do it, to introduce these very dangerous that just kill to kill. They don't even eat it all a lot of the time.
What is it to the eco society, the ecological area? Why are they doing it?
It was a ballot initiative. And it was passed by the people.
To bring wolves back.
Yes.
But what's the thought process behind it? Is it the whole thing like the, what's the big park, Yellowstone Park, where they released the wolves and changed the ecosystem or whatever it was?
Well, I mean, it's just, again, I don't even pretend to know how to think, how they're thinking and why they think this is a good idea.
Amazing.
But again, it's hard to understand because they're going to eat the elk. They're going to, you know, not just cattle and sheep, but they're going to do a number on the deer and the elk population there.
Sure.
It's beyond my comprehension that people would vote for this, but that's how out of touch society is. And that's what we're dealing with.
I don't know if you know the most recent statistic. It's been probably more than a year since I've looked. I need to update it. But it's in the mid-90s that the percentage of people in the United States who are urbanites, right? It's above 90%. So we've lost, as you just said, we've lost touch. Our agricultural communities where people all used to use horses to get around, and then you had to, you know, do some farming or you knew a farmer. Now we've become urbanites, and on top of that, add to that the animal rights groups with a narrative that they spend all their money and time doing. And by the way, multi-million dollars that they're making and putting in offshore accounts and stuff. There's another podcast in the Animal Tales lineup you need to listen to on that front. I'll post in the show notes. But they're removed from agriculture and animals. So they don't know how to make good decisions about animals, and they're not trusting the animal people because, of course, we're all trying to just pull one over and at the expense of the animals, which is the sad part of that is we're actually losing animals and losing the reality and like zoos, the training of animals. It's the elephant thing is just so disheartening to me. I talk about it often. We're not allowed to train animals anymore. They need to be left alone. So now they're in zoos and they're all protected contact for the AZA Association. And they're you know, the reason elephants bred better in captivity, and that was because they could train, they could walk up to them, they could sonogram them, tell them to lay down and palpate them and do the things they needed to do. It's a dangerous world when we stop training and really creating those relationships with our animals. It's scary to me. Cindy, there's a Forrest Lucas film. So we have Protect the Harvest now as well, which is another association, I think, puts out good information. I pass along a lot of times for what I call lay people or non-animal people. They do sometimes it's a little lengthy, but I think they do a good job of explaining things on the terms that non-animal folks can understand. So that's Forrest Lucas of Lucas Oil. But they have Forrest Films, and the what is about the rodeo. And I wish I would have looked up the name. I'll put it in show notes. I'm guessing you've seen it, but
you
definitely need to watch it. So the rodeo, it's just what you're talking about in San Diego. The rodeo comes to town, and the mayor is trying to ban it, right? Or he's a councilman, and it's an urban area. And his daughter ends up at a party meeting one of the cowboys and becomes infatuated. He goes out to the fairgrounds, and the cowboy ends up saving her little brother from in a lake or something. But the cowboy in the movie, where what I'm getting to, young man, does a really fantastic job of talking at the hearing and explaining his world and what it means to him, and kind of starts to turn the table. So I'll send you the link, but it's really, I think it's really good. I think it helps people see kind of both sides. The other thing I think is fantastic at the end, I think it was at the NFR where they put the horses out with the babies, the mamas and the babies.
Yeah, they do that quite a bit. At San Antonio just ended. They do it there, and they'll do it at Houston that's coming up.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Estes Park too.
And it's very emotional when you have these great rodeo announcers. There's music, they're in the spotlights, and they talk about the generational rodeo animals and the livestock. And I think it's tremendous. I give them a big pat on the back for that. I enjoy watching it. And I have no animals, and it makes me, it's done so well. That's
one of the things that brought me to Estes Park too, is because it's a tourist rodeo.
Yeah.
Or a PRCA rodeo, but it's mostly tourists there, and quite a few of them have never been to a rodeo.
Correct.
So we're trying to, entertain them and educate them and draw them into our culture. And Estes Park is a perfect place because it does have a great history, but it's so close to Boulder, and it has some of those leanings, but everybody loves the rodeo there. And that's why it's important to keep those community celebrations where we can share the livestock with folks that have never seen it before.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's certainly a beautiful area, but I was thinking it's close to Boulder, and anytime we've seen any crazy legislation, it's usually San Francisco and Boulder are the genesis of where these things are starting. And are there any current rodeo bans? There's nothing statewide, right? In the United States?
I believe in New York, there's that's been there for quite a few years, and it keeps getting introduced. It has not. I think it gets assigned to the Ag Committee. So,
that's good.
If you look at New York, there's 30 or more anti-animal bills. That's what I call them.
Sure.
They introduce them all the time. So
any state or municipality that has passed the rodeo ban? Or are there quite a few?
A long time ago, Rhode Island did.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I believe, tie-down roping and a few other items, maybe a flank strap. Pittsburgh did years ago. Pasadena did, but it was only on city-owned property. So you can do a rodeo on private property. And a few other municipalities, but we fought most of them fairly successfully. And a lot of them brought in PRCA rules as the law. They put in some standards, but they used rodeo standards, which, on the surface sounds good, but then you have people that don't know how to enforce them, what we tried to do was just say, we already have the rules. We're enforcing them. There are overall animal cruelty statutes that, you know, if there's a problem, you can prosecute under that. And one of the interesting things that I don't think a lot of people ever thought about was every time you introduce all these little legislations that are specific, mm-hmm. you're actually diluting the overall animal cruelty laws.
That's exactly
because
right.
Because then you can make the argument, well, it's not mentioned, so it must not be illegal. So if you have good animal cruelty laws and you have knowledgeable people and standards of what is animal cruelty, and you don't try and start piecemealing every event and piece of equipment and that type of thing, because anything can be cruel if you use it wrong.
Sure. Yeah. No, I agree. You had mentioned that earlier, and I was going to wrote down to come back to that they're, and I know you agree. I know the people that I've collaborated with over the years, there's animal cruelty laws out there. There's many of them on the books and in every state, every municipality. So we just encourage the strengthening or maintaining those, and that I personally would stand beside you and be happy to point out animal abuse. I mean, right. You and I don't want any kind of animal abuse, but the just deciding that an entire industry does something. And the other thing I say is, so here you are, this was not a video podcast, but, you know, we're kind of normal, we're normal looking people, right? It's interesting because when they indict an entire segment of the population, like rodeo or the circus or, you know, zoo people, whatever it is, they're basically saying that everybody, including your sponsors, everybody who's involved has turned their head to this just atrocity, you know, that's going on that they tell you is rampant, right, within these industries. And if you think about it that way, I found success in saying that to people who are not animal people. So if you think that there are things happening, that means in the circus, the high wire walker, the trapeze stars, everybody, the building personnel that are there when we're in the building, everybody is ignoring it and turning their head to it. They're not,
right.
Because it's not happening, right?
Right.
So
right.
It helps people understand we're not in some dark shaded area where they can't see us. And same for you guys. I just find that to be provide a little bit of credibility or thoughtfulness, at least, you know.
Well, and I always use that, like, you got, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 people that have purchased a ticket to that performance.
Yeah.
And they can see with their own eyes that the animals are well suited, they're healthy, they're fat, they're, you know, prancing around afterwards. So you're, you know, saying they don't know what they're seeing. And that's a little disingenuous to think that that many people could, that we could be treating the animals that bad. They're just not seeing it.
Well, and this is not an outcry from those who attend these.
Absolutely not.
It's and you know, too, the email come from all over the world. They're campaigns created by the animal rights groups. And they'll even institute a ban in a place where there is no rodeo or circus or whatever the activity is, because they want to set a precedent. And they could say, well, we've created bans in these many places, and they're not even places where anybody does that type of activity, but it's these campaigns, and they're from people who don't go or have an interest in these events. Fine, don't come, but don't try to put it out of business, you know?
Right. Free country, you do not have to go.
Yeah.
You can find other entertainment if you don't think that's right for your family.
Cindy, I think we've covered a lot of ground. I'd like to ask you to articulate to, again, the folks out there who maybe joined one of the groups or really care about animals, but they're a little like on the fence about what they hear. What do you say to those folks? If you're running one of your rodeos, what are you saying to the person who comes up and says, you know, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this?
Well, I think you ask a lot of questions. You find the experts, you find veterinarians in that group, you do your research and find online credible sources, and think for yourself. And what I've seen is when people do that, and when they look at things with an open mind, and they can go, well, I don't see what they're seeing, but perception is reality to people. And if we're not putting off a great perception, then that's those people's reality. And if they have one bad experience that isn't handled well, now we all know that things are going to happen with animals, yeah. but it's our responsibility to handle those things right, to see if we can do something better next time, and to tell the truth after it's over with. Yeah. And those are lessons that probably were very hard learned in the animal entertainment and sport industry. But you have to be very transparent, and you're always having to raise the bar. To me, that's status quo will never, and that's what this society expects. And that we're not just going to say that's how we've always done it.
That's right.
We're going to look and see, is there a better way to do it for the livestock? And that's another thing that I did, is I always referred to them as livestock. Not rodeo animals, but rodeo livestock, because they're different than puppies and kitties, right?
Sure.
And it has a real different connotation when you tell people, when you mention livestock rather than animals. Very small wordsmithing there, but I always use that. So, you know, I like to think that the general public is intelligent. They want to learn. They want to be entertained. And what we're seeing in the rodeo industry is they want to come to an event like rodeo, where we say a prayer, where we sing the national anthem, we have respect for our country and the Old West, mm-hmm. and livestock. And that's why rodeo is going gangbusters right now. Like,
it's very patriotic, for sure. I mean,
absolutely. I could have as many jobs as I wanted running these rodeos, because it's gotten past where a volunteer group can do it most, because they're so popular. Everybody wants to sponsor it. They want to come. They're all on television. You know, it's very, very, very popular. And as the country goes one way, when we see some of the things, when we see some of the liberal policies, a lot of people move closer back to what we're doing.
Yeah. I've said on this podcast so many times, I interviewed Marla Calico from the International Association of Fairs and Expositions. Didn't know she had a dairy background, but I certainly know her work with the agriculture communities and, of course, the agricultural fairs throughout the United States and beyond. And I say this often. I've performed at fairs. I had my animal shows. You want to see... These people are not the problem in this country. You want to feel good about people and families. Go to a fair, go to an event where these kids have raised their animals, their steers, chickens, goats, pigs, whatever, and they come to the county fair. They've had to get up in the morning before school and after school, take care of these animals. So it's that life lesson alone, which I know I learned with animals growing up, that everything comes before you. But then they take them to the fair. The whole family turns out. They put up their little, they make one of the stalls into their little area to eat. They bring their crock pots and their food, and the kids hang out. And from the toddlers to grandma, and, you know, they're not all the perfect family unit, but these people come together. They work together. They celebrate together. And it always does my heart good. I always enjoy going over to those areas and seeing those folks, and they fly the American flag, and they're very patriotic. And so I really love that. And I do love that about rodeos. You guys do the national anthem. And, and by the way, the PBR guys are, or guys and gals are, rock stars, right? They're absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get one of them on the podcast.
Yeah. What you're talking about with families, when there were hearings here in California, I would always have high school rodeo athletes. Every time the legislators were like, this is not your normal teenager. They are light, they're clean cut, they're well dressed. Yes, ma'am. They had never seen teenagers like that in their life. And it flipped some switches. I'm telling you what, it was very powerful to take those kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fantastic. And it's a good thought. I will look for, maybe work with you, but look for some of the younger generation to bring on to talk about that and their perception, because that's where a lot of this lies, that they have, as these generations are coming up, that we're moving so far away from the reality of animals and animal care. And sport, entertainment, all of that. I've interviewed the Iditarod race, the CEO, and everything. All of that's under attack, you know. But there's, he said, I loved what he said. He said, "When I come back, I want to be a dog on the Iditarod trail."
You know? Right.
It's but it's true of the rodeo animals and the animals I grew up with. They're guaranteed veterinary medical care, their food, their care, their transport, all of it. There's oversight on all of that. And if my kids show up at school and didn't have any, you know, problems or look like they were, something was wrong, nobody asked what they ate or where they slept or, you know, other than their shots they had to have. And for our animals, there were more regulations than for the children in our family when I was growing up. And I always, you know, that's always on my mind. And I'm fine with that because they don't speak. We speak for them. But true animal, true animal people do that on the behalf of the animals. That's what we do.
Well, and when animals have a job, they have a value. And
absolutely,
when you take away the job and their worth, then sometimes they don't get treated as well.
Right.
And that's something that a lot of people don't really think about. It's not bad for an animal to have a job.
Right. And they're so much better adjusted. I mean, watch rodeo animals or exhibited animals get in their transport vehicle, go to the next town, look around, and they go right to work. You know, people are always, the irony for me is, and maybe you've experienced this, people are always so, we're always, I don't own my horses anymore. I've had some neck surgeries, so I had to back up from that a bit. But always impressed with my animals because I could take them anywhere and do anything. I even did some horse shows as the exhibition act. But yet at the same time, they're willing to criticize what we do. But yet we had, I had the most, you know, well-behaved, versatile fireworks on a fair. They'd look up at the fireworks and then continue munching their hay, you know. And yet now at the 4th of July, dog and horse people lose their minds, you know.
Yeah.
Rodeo animals, they'll work right during the, you know, all of it. So it's kind of funny that, you know, the critics, but yet these are people who can't get their dog to behave. I'm a dog trainer locally, and, you know, the biggest critics are the ones who have the biggest challenges with their own animals.
I failed at dog training. Mine trained me.
That surprises me. Well, Cindy, I've really enjoyed chatting with you. I've wanted to do this for a while, and I'll put a lot of the links we talked about in show notes, and I'll give you the last word.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It's so good to have this group of people that we've known forever that continue to fight for that human-animal bond and for the next generation to be able to interact with animals. And we all have to stick together and continue to get the good word out.
Yeah. For sure. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you.
Well, you heard Cindy say it, and you always hear me say it. Go see for yourself. If you're curious about something, do some research. Again, consider the source on the internet. Make sure that you get both sides of the story. If you're only hearing one narrative, keep looking and look for the other side of the story. In this case, you could look up the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association and the Animal Welfare Council, and I'll put some other links in show notes to provide some references for you. I certainly hope you enjoyed my conversation with Cindy. I hope you'll subscribe. Please rate and review the podcast, and by all means, please share it. It's important for me to tell these stories, and I hope others will have a chance to listen in as well. And I do hope you'll join me next time for more Animal Tales.